You know, often in the Gospels, we read about the multitudes of people that were following after Jesus. It seems like wherever he went, there were throngs of people that wanted to be near him, to hear him speak or to watch him perform some amazing miracle and just witness him transforming lives. I mean, there's a story of the day that there were 5,000, maybe more, that spent the day with him. And at the end of that day, he fed them with the loaves and with the fish. Another occasion where there were so many people pressing about where Jesus was that he had to get into a boat and cast off a little bit from the shore just to have enough space so that he could continue to teach the people that had gathered there to listen to him. And then we read the stories such as the four friends who had a lame brother that they wanted desperately to get to Jesus so that Jesus could heal him. But the place that Jesus was so crowded with people, they could not get him through the door. So they pulled apart the roof and lowered him down upon his stretcher so that he could be in the presence of Jesus. So many stories of the crowds of people wanting to be around him. But I will tell you that probably my favorite stories in the Gospels are the stories where there were individual encounters that Jesus had just simply with one other person. And there are many of them. Times that Jesus would have a conversation with just one other person. Sometimes it was because that person approached Jesus. Other times it was because Jesus actually approached that individual. But there was something amazing that would take place when Jesus was just one-on-one with another person. It happened in John chapter 4 with a woman, a Samaritan woman at the well. When Jesus was sitting by the well and this woman came to draw water and Jesus engaged her in a conversation. Now this woman was blown away because men like Jesus wouldn't talk to Samaritan women like she was. But it opened the door for him to talk to her about the life-giving, living water that he could offer to her, a woman who was desperately searching for fulfillment in life and not having found it up until that time. The chapter before that, and Pastor John just taught on it just a few weeks ago, was the encounter that Jesus had with Nicodemus one evening. Just the two of them having a full-blown conversation. Nicodemus knowing that Jesus was from God, but having so many questions that he wanted Jesus to answer. And then we read the story in Luke chapter 10 about Mary sitting at the feet of Jesus, just listening to him speak to her heart in her own living room as Jesus was visiting her and her sister Martha in Bethany. There are a lot of stories where the multitudes were there, but the ones that really mean a lot to me are the ones that are just the one-on-one encounters. Well, we're going to look at one of those one-on-one encounters in the story tonight, as Jesus encounters a man who had desperate needs in his life. And out of that desperation, he is coming to Jesus hoping to get a response from the Lord. And the Lord is going to minister to him. Beginning with verse 40, Mark's Gospel chapter 1, verse 40, it says, "Now a leper came to him, imploring him, kneeling down to him and saying to him, 'If you are willing, you can make me clean.' Then Jesus, moved with compassion, stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, 'I am willing, be cleansed.' As soon as he had spoken, immediately the leprosy left him and he was cleansed. And he strictly warned him and sent him away at once and said to him, 'See that you say nothing to anyone, but go your way, show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing those things which Moses commanded as a testimony to them.' However, he went out and began to proclaim it freely and spread the matter so that Jesus could no longer openly enter the city, but was outside in deserted places, and they came to him from every direction." Now, this man was a leper, as we just read, and leprosy is a disease that many of us are just really not that acquainted with at all. Living in a prosperous nation like we do, leprosy is not common whatsoever. In fact, I would guess that there are very few, maybe none at all, of those of us that are here in the sanctuary tonight that has actually ever had an encounter with someone who genuinely had leprosy. Now, that word leprosy in the English language actually comes from a Greek word which meant scale. And what it was speaking of is the scaly appearance that began to form on the surface of the skin of a person who had contracted this disease. And it was the most feared disease in the ancient world for several reasons. For one, at the time, there was absolutely no cure for it. There was no doctor that had any remedy that would take away a man or a woman's leprosy if they had contracted it. It was also believed, though we know better now, that it was highly contagious. They thought it was so easy to be transmitted from one person to another. Now, we know today that that's really not the case. But the mindset back then is that not only is there no cure, but chances are, if you get close to somebody that actually has the disease, you have a high chance of actually contracting it yourself. And the disease was so feared because it basically looked like you were dying while you were still alive. Because the extremities of your body began to look like the flesh was literally rotting away. The fingers, the toes, your facial features, your ears or your nose. It began to affect the eyes as well. Now today it is referred to as Hansen's disease, named after the Norwegian doctor Gerard Hansen, who back in the 1800s actually was able to identify a particular bacteria that is the cause of the disease. But the reason that the name changed from leprosy to Hansen's disease probably had even more to do with the stigma that went along with the disease. Just to hear the word leprosy usually conjures up, even in our minds, though we may have never seen a person who actually has had leprosy, those of us that are at least familiar enough with the disease to know how it affects a person's body, you know, we are a little bit repulsed by that. So calling it Hansen's disease is a little bit more appealing. But back in biblical times, it was leprosy. And it was something that, though it's better understood today, was not so much understood back then. It was basically a death sentence to a person who had contracted the disease. It was going to be slow, and it was going to be ugly, and it was going to be lonely. And we're going to find out the reasons for that here in a few minutes. But with early diagnosis today, it can actually be cured, or at least be managed with proper medications, but not so back then. Today we know more, not only about how to cure it, but actually what actually causes a person to contract leprosy. You see, it's something that deadens the pain receptors. It's not so much that your flesh just simply begins to rot. It's that your body is beginning to lose its sensation of pain. Now, in the early stages, it actually is quite painful, but in a matter of time, the nerve endings begin to die off, and you lose all sensation of pain whatsoever. And so a person who contracts the disease slowly is losing the ability to sense pain in their fingertips, in their feet, in their facial features, and it just begins to progress from there. Now, to have a disease that does not have a lot of pain associated with it might sound, if you're going to be diseased, that might sound maybe the most appealing, because there are so many diseases that a person could get that are extremely painful. Wouldn't you opt for a disease that does not have any pain associated with it? Well, not so. With leprosy, you need to understand that in the loss of the pain, it also, you're losing the ability to be warned when something has inflicted an injury upon yourself. A person who is losing the ability to sense pain, and let's say in their hands, can burn themselves where in a normal setting, a healthy person would instantly jerk their hand away in order to keep themselves from being injured any further. A leper would not realize they are actually being burned and can actually scald their skin pretty severely. The same would go with a cut. They could cut themselves, and unless they actually visually see the cut, they're not aware that it has actually happened. And oftentimes, what would take place is that infection would set in into these burns or into these cuts. And that is what would begin the rotting process or the decaying process, is because the person now is dealing with infections that a healthy person would have been able to treat and fend off. So the leper may twist an ankle, they may tear a ligament, they may break a bone, and there would be time that would elapse before they actually realized that they had done any injury to themselves at all. In fact, it has been known, especially in third world countries with those that would contract this type of a disease, that in the middle of the night, it was not uncommon that, and I don't mean to be gross here, but that rats would begin to chew on the decaying flesh of the person that had leprosy. So when they would wake up, having not felt the pain of that chewing, parts of their body would be missing because of these rats. So there was one doctor specifically that often treated those with leprosy, that as part of his service to his patients, he literally would send home a cat with them as part of their treatment. And the cat was to stay with them in the room in order to keep the rats away. So I know I'm being a little bit graphic, but I want to describe to you what this man was dealing with back there in the first century. No expectation of a cure ever being found. Watching his body begin to contract these infections, begin to rot away, until eventually he would likely lose his life because of it. And that is why in verse 40 we read, "Now a leper came to Jesus, imploring him, kneeling down to him, and saying to him, 'If you are willing, you can make me clean.'" Now, while this man probably felt very little physical pain, I can guarantee you he felt a whole lot of emotional pain in what he had been experiencing because of this disease. Now, all of us have experienced physical pain. We've all experienced emotional pain. And if I were to take a poll with all of us tonight, if we had a preference on whether we were to go through something that had a lot of physical pain or a lot of emotional pain, we would probably prefer the physical pain over the emotional pain. Because emotional pain in our life tends to be a lot worse, more painful, and last a lot longer. Many of the people that I have spoken to or counseled over the years that earlier in their life they had gone through things where they suffered both physical abuse as well as emotional abuse, invariably will tell me that they would much rather take a punch than to be emotionally abused or go through that type of emotional pain. You got to understand that though this man was not facing a lot of physical pain at this stage of his disease, he was facing a whole lot of emotional pain. Why? Because of the stigma that went along with the disease that he had. In the Old Testament, there were 61 things that could defile a Jewish person. Leprosy was number 2 on the list, only outdone by the touching of a dead body. So leprosy was very high on the list of things that would defile a Jew. And because of that, there were a series of things that were required of a person who was diagnosed with this disease. In Leviticus chapter 13, verse 45 and 46, we will not turn there, but I do want to read a couple verses there out of the New Living Translation for clarity. And it says this: "Those who suffer from a serious skin disease, that is leprosy, must tear their clothing and leave their hair uncombed. They must cover their mouth and call out, 'Unclean, unclean.' As long as the serious disease lasts, they will be ceremonially unclean. They must live in isolation and their place outside the camp." Now, these couple verses list 5 different things that were an expectation placed upon the person that had this disease. Number 1, they could not live in town anymore. They had to live outside of the camp, that is, away from all of the healthy people. And this was the beginning of the establishment of, you know, what we have heard about, leper colonies, where those that had this disease would then have to live with each other. The only other people that they would have any contact with would be those that had the same disease as themselves. But the verses go on and add other things as well. They had to wear torn clothes. Wherever they went, their clothes had to be torn. And that was not a fashion statement. That was to signal to those that were around them that they were lepers, that they had this disease. It says also that they had to leave their hair a mess, unkempt. So they could not fix their hair. They had to wear torn clothes. They had to cover the lower portion of their face. And if they were out in public and they came around anybody that was healthy, they had to immediately yell out the words, unclean, unclean. Now, the Jewish Talmud, which was written later, actually added a sixth requirement to those that had leprosy, and that was this, is that they could not come within 6 feet of another person, of a healthy person. So they had to quarantine themselves. They had to cover their lower part of their face, and they had to stay 6 feet apart. Where have we heard that before? We are living right now in a society full of lepers, I guess, because we are treating each other essentially just the same, or at least nearly the same. And that is why I say that this man was going through a tremendous amount of emotional pain. Because it wasn't just the reality that I have a disease that is probably going to take my life, and between now and the time that I die, it's going to be a whole lot of misery. Not just because I have the disease, though I feel no physical pain, I am treated so poorly by everybody else around me. I mean, imagine if you, every time you went out in public and you got around other people, you had to yell out the words, unclean, unclean. You're at the mall, you're doing some shopping, but somebody comes a little bit too close to you, so that's what you yell at them. You're sitting in a movie theater. Somebody decides that they want to sit fairly close to where you are, and you have to yell those words out to them. Wherever you go, you've got to yell out the words, unclean, unclean. Your hair is a mess. Your clothes are torn. Immediately, those people understand who you are, what you have, and they immediately cringe and they get as far away from you as possible. Back in the 1980s, there was a movie that had come out called The Elephant Man. Now, those of you that are younger, you won't recall, I bet, but those of you that are older may recall that movie because it told the true story of an Englishman by the name of Joseph Merrick, who had this particular disease that severely disfigured his appearance, particularly the shape of his head, the look of his face, and other parts of his body as well. So disfigured was he that any time that he went out in public, he put essentially what looked like a burlap sack over the top of his head with an eye hole so that he can see where he was going, simply to keep others from cringing at his appearance. But in one scene in the movie, he is out in a public place when suddenly people are paying attention to the fact that he's walking around with a sack over his head. And they come up to him and they begin to say, "Hey man, why are you wearing a bag over your head?" And he just wants to be left alone, so he starts to walk a little bit faster. But now more and more people begin to gather around him, and suddenly there's a whole crowd of people that are coming after this man, wondering why he's walking around with a sack on his head. And all he wants to do is get away. He wants to be left alone. But he finds himself running into a public restroom and cowering in the corner of that restroom. This crowd of people come in, and one of them rips the bag off of his face, and suddenly all of them are gasping in horror at his physical appearance. Now you know what it is like to suffer the emotional pain of what a leper would have to go through. Joseph Merrick, in that moment, in that movie, there in the corner of the restroom, now his face being seen and everybody grossly looking at him and scowling at him, just made one statement. He said, "I am not an animal. I am a human being." You know, I think there's a lot of people today that maybe feel like that. If you remember your junior high years, I can almost guarantee you that that's how you felt in junior high. It seems like all of us went through that, right? When we feel like we have been ostracized, we have been rejected, we have been looked down upon, we have been criticized, we have been judged, we have been misperceived, and we're treated like that. That was this man. Now, in Luke's gospel, Luke actually tells the same story, and Luke adds a detail that Mark did not, and that was this, is that this man at the time was full of leprosy. What that meant is that it was very advanced. This wasn't the beginning stages of the disease when it's really not so bad, you know, maybe the tips of the fingers or the toes are being affected. No, this was full-blown leprosy, which meant that it was very visible to everybody and that likely he didn't have a whole lot of time left on this earth. Maybe he was getting close to death. And maybe that is why he, out of desperation, is now coming to Jesus. And in doing so, really, he is breaking all of the cultural rules because he is coming into a crowded place where Jesus was. Matthew also tells the same story in Matthew chapter 8, but Matthew adds the detail about the fact that there were multitudes of people following Jesus at this time. So while in our story here, we are looking at an isolated incident where Jesus is having a personal encounter with this leper, we have to understand that there were other people surrounding, probably watching what was taking place between this man with the disease and Jesus of Nazareth. And out of desperation, he comes and he kneels down, Mark says. Matthew actually says that he began to worship Jesus. And he simply says this, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." Now look at Jesus' response. Verse 41. Then Jesus, moved with compassion, stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, "I am willing, be cleansed." This is a powerful verse that has so much for us to consider. The first thing I want us to consider is this, is that word compassion. Jesus moved with compassion. Now that word in the biblical language actually, in a literal sense, means this: to be moved in one's bowels, which is not an attractive picture, but understand what is being gotten across here. That the word compassion actually comes from a term which means that you feel something in your gut. You are gut-wrenched. Many of us have felt that before for somebody else when we realize that somebody that we love very much is going through something incredibly traumatic. And you feel it right here, don't you? Because you care about that person. That person matters to you. You're thinking about all that they're going through in the moment and you just begin to feel it right in your gut. That's really what is being conveyed by this word compassion. Jesus, when he looked upon this man who has just fallen at his feet, pleading with him for help, Jesus begins to feel it right here, feeling it in his gut, moved with compassion. Now, I will tell you that compassion is different than pity. A lot of times, you know, we can feel pity for somebody. Maybe you're watching the news, you know, and some story comes on the screen. You're hearing the story about some tragedy that is affecting an individual or a particular family. And you're listening to the details of whatever the story happens to be about. And you just feel horrible for what they're having to face at that time. You feel really bad. But 5 minutes later, after the story is over and they've gone on to other news and so forth, you're sitting there and suddenly you turn to your spouse and you say, "You know what? I'm hungry. Are you hungry? Let's go get something to eat." And you've forgotten completely about what was taking place in the lives of those family members on the news story. That's pity. You feel bad for them. You realize what they're going through, and yeah, you feel bad, but it doesn't move you to actually maybe do something about it. Compassion is more than that. Compassion is when not only are you stirred for what somebody else is going through, you feel compelled to do something about it. So when the Bible says that Jesus, seeing the multitudes looking like sheep that have no shepherd, was moved with compassion for them, I want you to understand what Jesus was feeling. He was feeling it in his gut. As he is seeing a multitude of people whom he loves, who are lost, who are aimless in their lives, who don't know him. And he's moved with compassion. Jesus was moved with compassion. He felt it in his gut. But because he felt it, he wanted to do something about it. And that is why the second part of that verse, verse 41, it says that he stretched out his hand and touched him. Jesus touched a leper. Don't know if you've ever really taken note of that, maybe when you have read this in your own devotions. But here is Jesus reaching out and touching the untouchable. Now, why did Jesus actually do that? Jesus didn't have to touch him in order to bring healing into his life, right? I mean, there were many, many times that Jesus would simply speak a healing and the person would be healed. There were times that Jesus was not even in the presence of a person that he was going to heal. He just simply spoke the healing. And the healing took place in that very moment, though the person being healed wasn't even in eyesight of Jesus. So Jesus did not need to touch this leper. He could have just simply spoken the words and the man could have been healed. But I found it curious. I began to look into other times that Jesus reached out to touch individuals, and I found no less than 8 times in Mark's gospel alone where Jesus, not having to touch a person, specifically makes a point of reaching out to touch someone that he was going to heal or that he simply was going to show love and care to. He did that to Peter's mother-in-law in chapter 1, earlier in this same chapter. He did it for Jairus' daughter, who he raised from the dead. He touched a deaf man in chapter 7. He touched a blind man in chapter 8. He touched a demon-possessed man in chapter 9. And in chapter 9 and chapter 10, he gathered children in his arms and held them. Seems like Jesus oftentimes went out of his way for that physical touch in a person's life. And he's going to do so right here with this leper. I bring this out because I believe that God created us all with a need for human touch. That every one of us has a God-given need for physical contact with other human beings. Now, I'm not talking weird touch. I'm not talking strange touch. You know, I'm not talking inappropriate touch. I'm just talking caring, loving, real relationship type of touch. People that have been studied who have been deprived of real touch during their lives are being said to have greater depression, more aggressive nature, and more often have suicidal thoughts. Read a story that 800 years ago, King Frederick II of Germany decided that he wanted to do an experiment So what he did is he had newborn babies taken from their mothers, a group of newborn babies taken from their mothers. And he wanted these children to not be spoken to and not be touched, not physical touch. At least not any touch that was not beyond the bare minimum. You know, for the child to be fed, okay. For the child to be cleaned, okay. But other than that, do not speak to this child. Do not touch this child. And in a very short period of time, nearly every one of those children died. Though they were fed, though they were not ill at all, one by one, these babies began to die. You know, tragically, that same type of test has been done several other times in other countries and other types of studies to see what a person's reaction is to the deprivation of physical touch. And every time they have had the same tragic result. What does that mean? It means that there is a need, a God-given need, that we encounter physical touch. So imagine what it meant to this man who, as a leper, as long as he had had the disease, was deprived of any type of physical touch. Now he comes to Jesus in desperation, and what does Jesus do? Jesus reaches out and he touches him. This might have been the first time that this man had been physically touched by another human being in years. You know, there are times, as I've already explained, that Jesus went out of his way purposefully to physically touch another person. But there are other ways for that Jesus would touch individuals. It wasn't just a physical touch. Oftentimes he would touch their lives in other very meaningful ways, not a physical touch, but just in the way that he actually treated them. I think about the woman who was caught in the act of adultery. Here she was, condemned by a group of religious men. They wanted to kill her for what she had done. But Jesus, through his words to those hypocrites, one by one drove them away. And when they were all gone, and it was just Jesus and this woman that was left, he turns to her and says, "Where are your accusers? They're not here, Lord." His response, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more." There's a story about Zacchaeus, who was a tax collector. Now, tax collectors were super unpopular in Jesus' day. Hasn't gotten any better for them. But back then, it was pretty bad. If you were a tax collector, you didn't have a lot of friends unless your friends were tax collectors, because everybody despised the tax collectors. But Jesus comes up to Zacchaeus and says, "Zacchaeus, I'd like to have dinner with you." What do you think that meant to that tax collector? To have a guy who was very reputable at that time in society, very looked up to by everybody else, approaching him and saying, "You know, let's hang out." There are ways of touching a person's life without actually physically touching them, and Jesus did that also. He did it through his kindness. He did it through his compassion. He did it by treating a person in a way that nobody else was actually treating them. Let me ask you this. Have you ever been touched by Jesus yourself? Has he touched your life? Maybe you've never felt the physical touch of Jesus, but you without a doubt have experienced the touch of God in your life that just transformed who you are today. Has he touched your life? Let me ask you this. Has Jesus ever touched a life through you because of the way that you showed them kindness, the way that you treated them with dignity or respect or love or care? when nobody else was treating them that way. You know, that's what we are to be today as the people of God, as God's church. We are living in a generation right now where I think it is easier to touch a life now than ever before, because we see how people are treating each other. We see how they are treating each other, you know, out in public. The way that they are so easily set off, where they are so easily offended, where they are so easily critical of somebody else. How meaningful do you think it is when someone like you or me, a follower of Jesus, treats them with a kindness that nobody else is treating them with, that reaches out to them with a compassion that nobody else is expressing to them? Yeah, Jesus touched this leper, but he touched a lot of lives that it was not a physical thing, kind of a touch at all. It was just simply the way that he treated them with love and with compassion. Now, according to the law, touching an unclean person actually makes the one who touched them unclean. And so those that were clean were not to touch those that were unclean, or that contamination would contaminate them. I mean, that's how contamination happens, right? I mean, if I had two pitchers of water up here, and one of those pitchers was absolute pure water, and the other pitcher was contaminated water, and I poured the pure water into the contaminated water, does the pure water make the contaminated water pure, or does the pure water suddenly become contaminated? You guys know the answer. You don't pour pure water into contaminated water to purify the contaminated water. It makes it all contaminated. So that which is pure does not purify the contaminated. That which is contaminated contaminates the pure. Unless you're Jesus. Unless you're Jesus. There's no one else who can touch the contaminated and not only not be contaminated himself, but actually transfer his purity to their contaminated life. You guys realize that? Jesus and Jesus alone is the one that can do that, and he does it. He does it every day. And at some point in your life, he probably did that to you. He came and he touched your life, and you did not contaminate him. All your sins, all of your grossness, all of whatever you've been up to, did not contaminate him. Instead, his purity purified you. All because of what he did on the cross. Amen? Jesus did for this man what nobody else would do. He touched him. And when Jesus touched him, he, in a very real sense, was communicating his purity to this man who was so defiled. And in touching him, he made this simple statement, "I am willing." And in that very moment, that man was made whole and his leprosy left him. But then Jesus actually gave him some instructions. Verse 43, "And he strictly warned him and sent him away at once and said to him, 'See that you say nothing to anyone, but go your way, show yourself to the priest, and offer your for your cleansing those things which Moses commanded as a testimony to them.' However, he went out and began to proclaim it freely, and to spread the matter so that Jesus could no longer openly enter the city, but was outside in deserted places, and they came to him from every direction." Now Jesus warned him not to say anything. Instead, he said, "I want you to go to the priest and I want you to show yourself so the priest can offer the sacrifices and can declare you whole again. You are clean. You will be restored to society." But that's not what this man did. Instead, he was so excited about the fact that he was not a leper anymore, he began to go everywhere and proclaim it to anybody who would listen. the fact that he was clean, that Jesus had made him whole. Now, why would Jesus tell him not to tell anybody? For the very reason, as the result of what happened when he disobeyed. He disobeyed Jesus' direct order, so Jesus now could no longer go into the city. He had to go out to the deserted places. And if this is an irony, I don't know what is, because the story starts with this man who has to live out in the deserted places. He can't live in the city. And it's going to end with Jesus no longer being able to go into the city. He's got to be out in the deserted places. It literally is a complete switch where this man who is now healed no longer has to be outside. He can be inside. And Jesus, inside, is now going to be outside in the deserted places. But that's what happens every time a person gives their life to the Lord, is the great exchange and all of the universe takes place. As our defilement gets placed upon Him, His purity gets placed within us. We are invited in because He hung on a cross and had to cry out, my God, why have you forsaken me? One thing I want you to notice before we wrap things up here, though, is this. Did you notice this in verse 40, the end of verse 40? When the leper came to Jesus, fell at his feet, he said, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." He didn't say, "If you are willing, you can make me well." He did not say, "If you are willing, you can heal me." He said, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." And then Jesus, when he responded, "I am willing, be cleansed," he didn't say, "I am willing, be healed." Jesus used the same word. Do you realize that in all of the illnesses that Jesus healed in the New Testament, leprosy is the only one that is referred to as a cleansing? All of the other occasions, Jesus healed. Jesus restored. This is the only type of a disease that a person has that when that disease is removed, it's referred to as a cleansing. And I think we need to take note of that. Why is that? What makes leprosy different? I believe it's because in the Hebrew mindset, leprosy was a symbol of moral depravity. It was a representation of sin. There are a lot of parallels between leprosy and sin. Leprosy is painful when it begins. But after a period of time, the pain departs. And there is no more pain. The only thing that will be left, though, is a slow destruction of the body. Sin is similar to that in that usually when we start sinning, there is a lot of pain, the pain of conviction. We know that we're doing wrong. We know that we shouldn't be living this way. But the conviction is deep and it's painful. But when we persist in our sinful state, we start becoming dull to that pain. We lose the conviction. And those of us that have been there before, we may recall that in the beginning, we really felt guilty. But it was only a short period of time before that guilt began to give way, and we no longer felt bad about it at all. But just like leprosy, that is a slow decay, sin is the slow decay of a person's soul. It will destroy them from the inside out. If only the effects of sin were as visible as leprosy, I think that there would be a lot less sin being committed today. If only we knew what was taking place on the inside of us, if it was actually showing on the outside of us, we probably would have a more keen sense of avoiding those things which are sinful in the eyes of God. The amazing thing of this story is this, is that when Jesus touched the leper, the leper was made clean. And you know, today, when Jesus touches a sinner, that sinner is made clean. Because God touches lives. He touches them oftentimes in a physical sense. More often in a spiritual sense, washing their sins away, giving them new life. But I want us to finish up our time not only looking at Jesus as the one who touched this man's life to make him whole, but to realize that in our generation, we are his hands and feet. And there are times that you will encounter a person who really does need a physical touch. They just need a hand on the shoulder, or they need a hug. They need someone to just, you know, put an arm around them to let them know it's going to be all right, that you care. But there are other times that it's not so much the physical act of the touch, it's you're touching their life through an act of kindness in the name of Jesus. Reaching out to them with a heart of compassion, wanting to make a difference in their life when nobody else in the world seems to care. And you will be touching the lives of those today with the same love and compassion that Jesus touched this leper so long ago. And is that not what the Lord has called us to do and to be here in our generation? And I don't think that there is a time that true compassion and love and grace and just simple kindness will go farther than what we are experiencing in our culture right now. The darker this world gets, the brighter your light and my light ought to be shining as we allow Jesus to touch lives through us. Let's pray. Father.